OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
Now, you're very welcome along. It is The Hurling Pod. It is our first one of March. It feels like it's been a really significant weekend in the National Hurling League and maybe for the season as well. Clare have kept their chances of staying in the top flight alive. A 3-point win at their rivals Limerick this afternoon. Dimmer Burns saw red. Man of the match Tony Kelly said on TG Carr afterwards he probably should have got the line as well. But the Banner picked up their first victory of the season on a week where they found out their Hurler of the Year, Shane O'Donnell, would be ruled out for the entire campaign. A third straight win for Galway, seeing them join Tipperary at the top of the table, with Wexford now edging towards relegation, but not down crucially because of Clare's win today. Dermot Healy marked his first start for Cork with just 1-5 as they edged out Kilkenny at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Offaly remained top at Division 1B after labouring to a win against their neighbours Westmeath. Westmeath are now heading towards Division 2A for next season. Antrim stuck very late to secure a draw against Carlow, and Dublin suffered another late defeat as Waterford rallied to beat the Dubs this afternoon. And that now leaves a situation where Waterford and Offaly are the strong favourites to go up from 1B at this stage. Delighted to say Paul Murphy is here. How are you, Paul?
How you doing, lads?
And James Skell is here as well. Just back from Limerick, where he was covering the game for Off the Ball. How are you, Skell?
I'm very well, lads. How are you keeping?
Oof. I mean, we wondered if this was going to be a very, very difficult week for Clare. It, in fact, brings me right round to one of the comments that came up on Spotify, because I promised last week I would check the Spotify comments because I knew there were ones coming in there. And this one comes in from Tommy Walsh, who's not that Tommy Walsh, who said, question for Skell. How likely is it now that the 2024 League and All-Ireland champions Clare are relegated from Division 1A and not make it out of the Munster Championship? So take the first part first. What's the possibility to get the Great Escape?
Jesus. First of all, I didn't expect them to win today's game, and they won it in quite a fashion, I have to say. To answer that man's question directly, I need to crunch a few more numbers, Will. That's a tough question, and that's a loaded question, and that's one that could get me assassinated by the Clare public. So I'll do a morph right, and I'll refrain from answering that question until we get to the end of the league. Is that right?
Well, when did I refrain from answering questions?
You've been asked three times this year already who's coming out of Munster, and you've dodged it three times. So
no, I have not. I think I actually raised it myself.
I asked you direct at one stage, right? Okay. You brought it up again last week, dodged it again, and then Will hung you 2 weeks ago.
I don't understand why this is all on me.
How's about we play this slightly different, Skell, in the spirit of Tommy's question? Last week, I think it was 91% was where you were at about them going down at that stage. Is it now less than 91%, even if they have to win their last two games and no Shane O'Donnell here?
Well, sure. It has to be like, again, watch me say it, Will. We're an evidence-based podcast here, and they were very impressive today with Cork and Tipperary to come. Yes, the percentage is dropping. It's dropping in right favour. Wexford have to, you know, continue to lose out, if you put it that way. Now, what chances of survival have they have? God knows. Like, I think next week's game will depend an awful lot, because with Galway and Limerick, I mean, if Galway win that game, you know what I mean, next thing you're heading towards parity with Limerick, and you're looking at head-to-heads and whatnot, so that comes into its permutations. I don't want to talk about now, but
Wexford's up to play Limerick, and Wexford would have to win that game. So if Limerick are going to get sucked into the relegation fight, three-way, you would need a Wexford win there as well, so...
Yeah, which is, because I'm not going to say anything, because I went back through our predictions, our predictions table. Really, let's good. Just say we should start again, lads, okay? Because you only do a little game and you get off terribly. You're right, stop, start again, that was terrible. We're not going so good, okay? We're not going so good. But I just blame the league. The league is tough. It's tough to get a true feel where teams are at. I'm not going to attempt to call next week's game, Will.
Look, we did a lot of close games. So go on, a hot take for me there. Are they getting out of Munster? Because obviously, look, the Shane O'Donnell news before we dig into the game itself. That's a massive blow. I was listening to James O'Connor during the week. He was saying, look, they have players who are like scoring forwards. They have players who can do things like Tony Kelly out of nowhere. But Shane O'Donnell was almost like that glue that held everything together last year. So he's a huge blow, isn't it?
I don't like these comparisons, but you know, they have players like Tony Kelly who can do things out of nowhere. That's, you know, we're talking about a generation player like Tony Kelly who has the ability to take over Ireland finals. And then right beside him is Shane O'Donnell, who is Mr. Consistent. Now, not just 7 out of 10, he is 9.5 out of 10 every single day. So I went back on the numbers. I had to see what kind of impact does this have from an American standpoint. So buckle up. So Clare scored 15 goals, 190 points last year, right? Which is a cumulative value of 235 points. Shane O'Donnell scored 213, which was 7.2%. He has directly assisted 5 goals on a platter, 6.5%, and he was fouled 17 times. That's 6.8. So he is 20.5% result of their scores. That's 1/5 wiped. Now, look at it. You can say, obviously, whoever replaces him could contribute, but that contribution is not just numbers. It's the overall impact he has in ball winning capability, which we know a lad of, I think he's 5'10", and by his own admission, he seems shorter, but his leap, his catching ability, his ball winning ability, his threat at running directly at opposition goal, it creates a small bit of pandemonium and panic for opposition defences, and it actually opens up gaps for others. So he's a crucial piece in the Clare jigsaw that is missing. Now, is there any hope for him to come back? I think that at this point in time, we're heading towards Patrick's Day, it's very hard to see. But look, strange things have happened. I did say about Conor Cleary last year when he popped his shoulder that he'd be out. He returned within a couple of weeks. So, but if we're saying, if what we're hearing Conor Cleary is true, he's out for the season, he's a huge loss. And look, I don't want to be too sensationalist, but like, it's very hard to go and defend your title against teams who are gunning for you when you're missing your who was your best player last year. You know, it's very, very hard to do. You want to actually improve and get better because everyone's coming after you. You want to bring in youth to support the cast you have there at the minute, not to be losing your most important player. So that's a very, very tough pill to swallow for Clare.
You've done your shoulder before, Skell. Is this not a bit strange that we knew that Shane O'Donnell wasn't going to play during the league anyway, and it seems that this injury was suffered at the tail end of last season? Now, he went on to play club championship for the rest of the year, so like, I'm not in his medical team, so I can't say why they made the decision to go and have the surgery when they did. Yeah. But to me, it seems quite late for him to have the surgery if he was going to miss the league anyway. Would you not have done that a bit earlier?
It's extremely late. And I suppose I went through both scenarios, Will, whereby on one shoulder, I was advised to go through the rehab cycle. It failed and I had to end up getting surgery. So you're missing twice the time. And on the other hand, I was advised straight away to get shoulder surgery from the off, which was obviously the better. In this instance, I reckon what happened was he was injured in the Intercounty Championship. His club championship was coming, wanted to take part, as you do, and then was given a rehab program after that to try and follow to get him back into, you know, some sort of shape for this year's championship. I would estimate that rehab program has failed, that it didn't rehab sufficiently enough. And now he's at a position whereby he's having to get surgery now when he could have got it potentially 2-3 months ago. So that's just time lost. He can't get back. I'd imagine it's extremely frustrating. I went through it myself where if you were, I suppose, advised correctly, you would have gained 12 weeks. Right now you've just lost it and your year is over. So that's another year is gone. And who knows what impact it's going to have on Clare, but it's going to be huge. And I always, if I hear about someone dislocating their shoulder, having gone through it straight away, I tell them, get the surgery. Just get it, because there's a degree of finality about it. At least you know there's been a procedure where it's corrected. Whereas with rehab, you just don't know. You just don't know, has it done right? What was my starting point? Where am I now? Do you know, did I have 50% improvement? Did I have 10? You have no idea. So that little bit of, I suppose, fear, your own trepidation about it is always there. Whereas surgery, you trust the medical professionals and go, yeah, they've done a good job. And now it's all building back to where I was, you know, when I was fit and healthy. So it's very tough for him himself. But I would question the advice you got.
Okay. A rare thing as well, Murph. So when I initially shared the quotes that had come from the Times through Brian Lowen, usually you'll get people who will be gleeful about the fact that the Hurler of the Year is missing and it boosts teams' chances of going through in Munster or the All-Ireland series. But funny enough, you had Limerick supporters, Cork supporters, Tipp supporters, who were all saying that actually the biggest shame of all this is that we're not going to see Shane O'Donnell for the season, as opposed to how it might actually weaken Clare. This is a guy who's like ridiculously respected, both by opposition, his peers, and also by supporters around the country as well. It's a huge blow for hurling to have him gone for the year.
It is, yeah. And the fact, I think a lot of talented players, you know, unfortunately, they miss certain years through injury or whatever it might be. And sometimes when that happens, people's first knee-jerk reaction is to think about something that made them angry about that player one time. So they either like him or they dislike him. But there's nothing to dislike about Shane O'Donnell. Like, he's never actually done anything during his career that is contentious that I can remember of, or that would give another team, bar hammering goals in against them, give another team supporters reason to dislike him. Like, he's a lad who just goes about his business, and invariably, more often than not, as a non-Clare supporter, you're watching him when he's not playing your team, and you can just appreciate how creative he is. And he's one of those players, regardless across any sport, every so often there's just these creative players that you don't know what they're going to do next. And that creativity just leads you to go and, I just want to watch this player the whole time. You know, they're so exciting for the game. And there was, I agree with you, there was this kind of outpouring during the week of, this is a huge letdown for hurling. It's like if Davy Clifford, you know, touch wood, if he was to get injured for the year, people straight away go, we're now going to miss his creativity for the year. And I suppose as well, Shane O'Donnell, I don't know what age is he now. Is he 31 or so? Like, I mean,
I think he's just turned 31. Yeah.
Yeah. So he is knocking on his career, and we want to see as many more years with Shane O'Donnell as we can. So obviously, being told straight out that most likely he's not going to play at all this year. Sure, you have to say that's a dampener on the championship straight away. So look, it's very unfortunate, and the outpouring, you know, to be honest, has been top class from the hurling community. Just saying that this is not what we wanted to see. We'd rather, even if it's to our detriment, see a Clare team with Shane O'Donnell in it. So look, hopefully he gets back, and hopefully even if we got him for the tail end of the championship, brilliant. But it's obviously a creative spark lost from the championship now.
Yeah, again, Skell, before we move off O'Donnell, am I right in thinking that obviously Brian Lone was given the most pessimistic outlook here, which was don't expect to see Shane O'Donnell for the rest of the season? But you've been through the rehab on this. Again, we don't know the exact nature of where Shane O'Donnell is on his recovery after the surgery. But to me, the possibility of him coming back in June or July, you can't totally rule that out, can you?
I wouldn't say totally rule it out. If he goes ahead and gets surgery now, rule it out. Just rule it out, because that's a direct incision into your body, you know. Whereas at the moment, if he doesn't get surgery, it becomes a question of what's his pain threshold. That's been said to me as well. How much pain can you take? You know, straight up. And if you can take, you know, I suppose what it feels like in the shoulder, it's very hard to explain. It's one of the worst injuries I think you can get anyway. It's just, it's your whole bodily movement in terms of our sport. You know, it's all jeopardized. So I think for him himself, the best thing for him is to go get it sorted. I'm talking about, yes, the championship, and people will look at it, and you'll have those who will think that the championship is more important than the man himself. But you have to understand his quality of life. The longer he goes on with it, the more damage he's doing to his body. So the quicker he can get it fixed, the better for him long term. Not just hurling, but long term. So, but I don't see him. If he goes ahead with surgery, there's not a notion he's coming back. No way.
Okay. Not a notion. Okay. Well, today's game, let's dig into Clare's win. So Clare, 3 points up at halftime. Ultimately, they'd be 3 points up at full-time. Won 121 to 21 points in the end. David Reedy's on both teams, but it was Clare's David Reedy that got the goal of the game, as they won by 121 to 21 points. Skell, you were there, so I'll give you a first shout in this. Nearly 17,000 in the Gaelic grounds for a match in the middle of the National Hurling League. And I thought overall, a very, very good performance from Clare, when the reality is their backs are up against the wall here. Like, even going into this, they knew they had to win. I appreciate they still have to win their last two games if they're going to stay up anyway. But a bit of resilience shown from them after the three defeats they had coming into this.
Resilience is a great word. I think, you know, in the first, Limerick started hot in both halves at the very beginning. Like, in the first 10 minutes in the first half, they had 8 shots. In the first 10 minutes in the second half, they had 6 shots. And at both stages, like, Limerick had goal chances. There was like this abnormal amount of pressure being applied to Clare. Second half, Limerick got 4 points in a row. But just like I was saying after, it's like Limerick threw a couple, if this is boxing terms, Limerick threw a couple of big punches at Clare. Clare took them, didn't die, and came back and gave their own. And I have to say, it's mightily impressive, because Clare didn't have their full complement. And everyone knows Limerick didn't either. They were missing, by my count, nine All-Stars, and nine multiple All-Stars, mind you. But still, Clare has to beat what's in front of you. You had, as you said, nearly 17,000 people there, 80% of which was Limerick. You know, when Limerick got kind of the tail up, let's say, at each period whereby they were shooting, putting pressure on Clare, coming back into the game, you know, especially after halftime, where they were 3 down, came back into it, went a point up, you thought, geez, this could just turn now. This could turn in favour of Limerick, and they could run through like we've seen them do so many more times in the past. But Clare didn't. They just stuck to their plan, sent in a long ball, got lucky, Dave Reedy, goal. Next thing, the landscape of the game just changes. And they kept plugging away. And it wasn't a case of you were waiting for Limerick to come back and overtake Clare. Clare kept punching and punching and punching. And their timing was perfect. They had a good spread of scorers. Their time of scoring was quite good. They never went too long without a blank spell. And the kind of star of Limerick. And in fairness, we'll come to it in a moment. Let's say Tony Kelly, by his own admission, I didn't hear the interview now, but just what you were saying, yes, he should have been red carded. Jeremy Byrne is the red card. I don't think had a great impact on the game as a whole. You can't point toward and say that's the reason Clare won. But Clare won on full merit, and it was like they just clicked into gear. They clicked into a mode that we haven't seen this year so far, and that mode is championship is coming on April 20th. Cork are coming down the tracks. We need to be ready. We haven't been ready or even preparing like a team who's trying to get ready, and they just turned over that new leaf, and they came out firing. And I have to give great credit to them, because I think all three of us win for Limerick. The bookies win for Limerick. And you can't argue why everyone win for Limerick, but just it was a very impressive, workmanlike, dogged, passionate performance from Clare that I got the sense that there was an awful lot of hurt after the Wexford game last week. both from the public and from the team as a whole, and collectively put it together. And when they see that green jersey, it's like a red rag to a bull. They just come out and go with fire and finish them. So credit to them.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, Murph. I mean, whether they go on and win these games against Cork and Tipperary or not, they needed to have a response here. And like, even a few of the commenters from last week on the YouTube were making the point, Clare supporters, that it was like, now it's about the next 7 or 8 weeks, that whatever happens and whether Clare are relegated or not, it's about being in the right position for the start of the Munster Championship. Well, this is the perfect way to start turning the year around, to go and beat your rivals away from home.
Yeah, you know, considering their performances so far, there wasn't a whole lot you could take from the Clare performance. Like, their match against Kilkenny was probably the only one that they could really take something from, and the bottom of the barrel really being the performance against Wexford. Not because Wexford had beaten them themselves, being on a bad run of form, but just because the performance was so poor. They didn't really bring anything to the game. A lot of the players were just really flat on the day, and Brian Nolan even said it afterwards. So, given that run of performance, you know, if you were to take one match to win before getting the championship, because again, we can talk about the league all we want, but it's the championship is where they want their form to really come good. Any one of those matches that you take a win from, it'd be the Limerick match, because really you can lose 4-5 matches, whatever, but you can beat Limerick and still point to that this is what we're capable of. Whereas, you know, if you go, let's say if Kilkenny or Galway was their only win or whatever, you'd actually, and you'd lost the other games, you'd be going with yourself, geez, lads, where are we at all? Whereas now, going back up the road to Ennis this evening, like Brian Lowe and all the players can go, like John Conlon spoke after the game and he said, training was excellent during the week and we know matches haven't been good and we haven't been performing well. It kind of allows you to shed that skin and say, like, you know, we haven't been performing well yet. We admit that. Training's been brilliant this week and it feels like they're maybe turning over a little leaf at the moment. And as well, the baggage of, you know, Shane O'Donnell being announced this week that he's not going to be part of the panel, or not part of the panel, but he most likely won't be playing for the year. Like, there's a lot going on. So, like, a win like that against Limerick banishes a lot of that from the mind and it kind of allows them just to get on with it now for the next while. So it was a very gutsy performance. It was a huge performance. And we've seen Clare, to be honest, the other thing you could say is if Clare needed anything to reset them, it probably was a match against Limerick, because they nearly revert to their true type when they play Limerick. And at times when, you know, Clare are struggling for a performance, they never fail to perform against Limerick. So, you know, in hindsight, looking back at it, it was easy to say that, you know, why Limerick were going to win. It was hard to see this performance coming from Clare. But then when you look back on it, you say, well, maybe, you know, maybe the last few years has shown us that whatever has been going on, Clare turn up for Limerick, that's it. But look, yeah, great performance, gutsy performance, and a good match. That's another thing to say as well. It was a good match to watch. Yeah. It was enjoyable. Nice bit of bite to it. I'm going back 2 years ago and I'm thinking, remember we were talking how flat the league was, like, you know, and how predictable it was. And it's great this year that there is bite in games and we're seeing that bite. I'm not talking about red cards. I'm just talking about general bite in play. But it was a good match to watch, yeah.
Just in those two instances, you can go first in this, Murph. Like Tony Kelly said afterwards on TG Carr when he was chatting to Cúnamh Flaherty, that on a different day, referee would have probably given him a red card as opposed to a yellow. I don't think any of us are going to disagree. He probably should have been sent off.
Well, that's it. I thought it was great for... It was fair play to Tony Kelly for saying that, because it allows a proper discussion to be held on it. Like, the thing is that we're talking about here, he should have got a red card, really. Not because there was malice in what he was doing, but, like, the rule is a reckless use of the hurl, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so, and it was reckless. There was no mitigating factor in that. Adam English threw him a great sidestep. Been there, you know, lad throws you a sidestep, you're heavy-legged, you throw out the hurl to try and block him. It just happened to be that Tony Kelly hit him in the face. Reckless use to hurl straight into the head. So, it was a red card. Again, you know, it's not a case that every single time a hurl hits a face guard or a helmet that it's a red card. It's not. But when two players are passing each other like that and you, as a last gasp, put out a hurl to try and stop them and or maybe hit the ball, you're running the risk of getting a red card. And it's similar with if you're running in trying to time, and I know we'll get to Keane Kenny's one in a while, if you're running in trying to shoulder a fella, you also roll the dice on, if they change their position, you hit them, it's you're the one at fault. So I just think fair play for Tony Kelly for saying it, that he's dead right. Like, I understand Thomas Welsh going, feck, this is a quick one to try and decide on. You know, what was it like? Now, he saw blood, maybe. Does that factor into it or not? I don't think it probably should. I think you just decide whether it was a bad slap or not. But Tony Kelly is dead right in saying that, depending on the referee, that was a red card. And I think that's the fairest assessment you can say of it. It should have been a red card, but also it comes down to, on the day, in the moment, what referee as well. And it was just that borderline of, was it, wasn't it? I think it was anyway.
Yeah, like Scale, you were in the ground, so you didn't have the benefit that Murph and I had when we were watching the game on TG Car, where we get to see it from two different angles and straight away it looks like it's a clear red. Like in the ground, did you get a feeling in real time that it was going to be a red card?
No, I did, because in the gantry, let's say, where it happened, Tony Kelly was right there, and it was Adam English, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So English just steps and it was right in my line. So as the crow flies, it was probably 25, 30 yards away from me. And I turned to the lads beside me and said, red. Because if you look at the action again, let's say he raises the hurl, hits him in the head, and immediately Thomas Walsh does the sign for blood sub. So I said, that's a hurl to the head. After drawing blood, let's split him. That's enough force to hit him in the head. You know, sometimes you get these accidental tips in the helmet, you know, whereby it's not enough force to do anything, but this was drawn blood. So I said, red card, straight away. So I was very surprised by yellow. And then if you fast forward a few minutes later, Aidan O'Connor, it was a very light slap on, I think, Keane Gallivan, I could be wrong there, across the arm as he passed him. Yellow card as well. So you're putting the degree of incident in the same level, you know. And I think, look, if you ask Thomas Walsh, and look, referees make errors too, that's absolutely fine. Would that be a red in retrospect? He'd say, yeah. I'd say in hindsight, he'd say that should have been a red. And did it change the course of the game? It had an impact.
Sure,
the man of the match here.
You know what I mean? 25 minutes into the game. So you can say that regardless of what way the game is going, a red card for any team in any game at that stage has to have an impact on the game.
Absolutely, it was, yeah. That's why Kieran Burns was so late. I said no, but this Tony Kelly after the man of the match, you're like, oh, he did, yeah.
I was just going to say, even for the Burns one, so at the point that Burns gets sent off, Limerick are chasing the game anyway, and Clare seem to have set up in a situation where they were happy enough to maybe soak a bit of pressure and counter-attack. So actually Limerick being down a player would have had less of an impact than Tony Kelly, who was going to drift into space for 40 minutes.
Maybe I'm wrong now, but like I hit Clare's last score on the 59th minute, which is a McCarthy free, so they were 6 up at that stage.
Yeah.
And Burns got sent off in 60-something, did he?
Yeah, it was late. It was 4 or 5 minutes of normal time.
66 left, or something like that, was it?
Yeah, it was around that, yeah.
Yeah, so again, you're right. They had set up shop, do you know what I mean? And just allow Conlon to go back a bit deeper. Conlon, that was it. So, can't see a major influence.
And I think as well, if you look at it, if Tony Kelly gets sent off, I'm trying to think back, was it around the 25th or 30th minute maybe? Eventually, I think just attrition rates come into it there and Limerick probably just kick on, despite they were making bad decisions and shooting from wayward angles. And, you know, there was just a lot of non-Limerick type decisions were being made. That's good the point. Best way I could class it.
Yeah.
So I think either way, Limerick get away with that over a course of about 40 minutes and they end up winning the game. Whereas at the stage where Dermot Burns gets sent off, Limerick, I think we're just, again, just getting caught a few times flat-footed, making bad decisions. We're just looking a little bit edgy. And it's just ring rust. That's all it is at the moment. It's fine. But those bad decisions then are just compounded by someone getting sent off. It nearly just casts the game then to, you know, it's just a sign that, okay. Now, in fairness, it could have been won. Like one ball going in, Gillan gets a flick on it, you know, suddenly you have a goal. But in general, at that stage, like sometimes teams nearly take a bounce when a player gets sent off, depending on the circumstances. But because Limerick were looking for that bit of confidence and just couldn't find it, you know, Burns getting sent off, obviously the confidence just goes straight away to Clare then, and they just smell blood, pop the ball over the bar, do something, it'll just see out the game. So again, when and under the circumstances a player getting sent off has a huge impact. But no, you're right, Scott. Burns is one. No.
But you mentioned the point about, you said it, use a phrase there, Murph, like un-Limerick type stuff.
Mm.
So like we've sat here numerous times over the last couple of years and we've said Limerick, the numbers we shout out about them will be normally 45 to 50 shots, generally 70% efficiency, game over. Mm. Today was 39 shots, 53% efficiency. Non-Limerick type stuff. It was a great way of putting it. So they just weren't as sharp as we become associated with them. And maybe this is a blip. And where we
was that down to Clare though, Scale, or was that down to just Limerick not being at their normal level? What was the reason?
Well, in terms of goal attempts, they had 5 goal attempts Limerick had.
Yeah.
And 2 of them, I think, were very fair, but the other 3 were pushed, really, really pushed. And one particularly, the one with Glenn in the second half, he should have passed to Flanagan. I think in championship mode, that goes across the square, green flag. I do think. Same way, 30 seconds in, Shane O'Brien, I think in championship mode, that's a goal.
Yeah.
You know, I think so. It's just that bit of both mental and physical sharpness wasn't there today. And we can point towards Clare and Wexford, and we can say last week there was a mental frailty in Clare last week. You know, they just weren't as sharp. Maybe there was a bit of complacency. Who knows? Maybe they had to Limerick today. Who knows? You know, there's so many different aspects of this. It's just when you said non-Limerick type like characteristics of performance, that hits the nail on the head, because the numbers for me always stack out. They always just show you.
Yeah,
53% is a statistics or a percentage for shoot efficiency that I don't know have I ever seen with Limerick since we're on this pod.
Yeah. And like there's a few examples I can think of maybe in the last 10 minutes or so, I'm going to say. And it's not singled out any player. Like, I mean, it was just systematic through the team. And again, I've been part of those teams where on a given day, you just go, Jesus, we're making bad decisions here today. But Limerick, to take from Skettle there, it's the efficiency at times when it really needed. They really focus their mind and they start popping balls over. Jason Galan, I think he got one or two balls in the last 10 minutes and he just lumped it down to the number 11 position. And it was a lump. It wasn't I have a player running here. And it was a 50-50 ball. And you just don't associate a 50-50 ball when Limerick need to keep possession and get a score. That's just not what they do. I know, just before I said, Carl O'Neill then went through another stage and he just hand-passed the ball to where there wasn't a player. He was going to run up the right-hand side, hand-passed it. And it was just a kind of a get rid of the ball. And the very last one was, I can't remember who it was. Was it Shane O'Brien or who was it? But they won a ball in around the 21, went for a shot and just poked it into Ivor Quilligan's hand about five minutes to go. And there were 4 points down. Well, so it's just those things where you're like, that's not Limerick. And that's why I was kind of going, yeah, deserving win for Clare, but this wasn't like Cork and Limerick in the All-Ireland semi-final last year. It wasn't a really good Limerick performance that was just completely shut down, do you know?
Right.
Sorry, Skell, go on. You were saying.
I was only going to ask you, when Galan gets those balls, you couldn't see the forwards movement, could you?
No.
It was kind of, the camera was on one end. The one that really stood out for me was about 2 minutes to go. It felt like Galan just tried to put it in the mixer and Clare just had loads of players back. And I don't know what it was. It was John Conlon or someone just like stepped into space and just walked back out with it.
Like when I'm looking at the Limerick forwards that has seven seasons, like we always associate them with hyper movement in both lines, in the full forward line laterally and the half forward line up and down across the way. Today, let's say, particularly in the last 15, 20 minutes, they were very, like, jet-lagged is the phrase I used the last beside me. They just look leggy. Like Tom Morrison came back for his first day, looks really leggy. Has work to do. Straight up, you know what I mean?
Well, I'd expect that nearly out of him though, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, like, yeah. But just leggy, like real, like second gear kind of stuff, you know what I mean? So it just goes to show that the countdown then for him too, to 7 weeks to go here. Yeah. So he has to get into shape, not for 7 weeks' time, like for 5 weeks' time to get himself in the team. You know, I'm not sure what Hegarty's status is at the moment. So those guys that are missing, they need to get those guys back to get that bit of, what's the phrase, mojo back into them again.
All this efficiency and cohesion, but mojo sometimes is the right word.
We need mojo. We just get flowing again,
call on your inner Austin Powers there for a bit of mojo.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, a broken hand is at least a month for Hegarty before he's back, surely. I don't know how bad the fracture is, because all we hear from John Kiley is it's a broken hand from the Cork game, which is a few weeks ago now, but I can't imagine he's doing a whole lot for another 2 weeks. And
the one thing about a broken hand is that, like, that fella's training away, like, his legs will be fine when he comes back. It's just a matter of throwing on an ash guard and off you go, really, because the one thing, nearly some lads get terrified when they get an old arm injury, because that means they can get absolutely dogged by the strength and condition lads with running. So they nearly come back in better nick than when they went away. So,
Are ash guards still doing the rounds? It seems ash guards were like the most popular thing 10 years ago. Very few people wear them now, though.
TJ wears one now. David Fitzgerald, does Fitzgerald wear one?
Who was the man back in your day in your respective counties used to wear one?
DJ Kerr.
DJ is Mr. DJ's like, he basically advertised him.
And sure, he got wicked flack, I think, at the time, because it was, like, remember when lads started wearing helmets first? The lads who used to hurl in the 1930s lost their mind, because I remember a fella, Uncle Kenny from Tullerone, calling them bird cages. The fellas were wearing bird cages on their head. And like when helmets came in, it was like, oh, the game is gone. You're wearing a helmet. Similarly, I remember something, if I'm correct, about ash guards. Let's go, sure, I have five broken knuckles, sure, nothing wrong with me. Like, no, but I'm trying to think. I'm fairly sure David Fitzgerald, Clare wears one, TJ wears one. I don't know. Kieran Joyce wears one, Cork.
Is it an actual ash guard that Joyce wears? He definitely wears some kind of protection.
Well, it's a glove. I think quite a few of them are wearing, I could be wrong. I think it's like a type of ice hockey type glove or something to that effect. It's that's what hurling helmets are anyway. Originally, the Coopers, they're all ice hockey.
Canadian.
I think that's what it kind of is. It doesn't just protect the back of the hand, it protects the knuckles as well. Michael Rice used to wear one as well after he got injured that time. He'd wear one after 2012 when he got the finger operation, because it was just, he had to protect the hand.
Looking at TJ's one here, it is a bit like a glove. It kind of wraps around his hand as well. So, there you go. Not too many people using them anymore, but there are obviously a few high-profile ones that still are. Dermot Burns, Murph. Like, Well, you said it looked like frustration when we were texting about it earlier on. Like, yeah. I couldn't believe he got sucked into that row. I mean, the minute that he got sucked in, you're like, this is a red card. There's at least two or three striking offences in there, he's gone. Like, was that a case of just frustration with how things were going? Because, again, this could be a costly one. He's going to be suspended now for the next game as well against Galway.
Yeah, it just felt to me frustration. Like, I don't know. Again, we're sitting at home watching on telly. It's hard to call it. But he turned straight away. Like, I mean, after the free was given, granted, Clare boys came in and they pushed him away. And, you know, that can get the blood up in itself. But he just turned and just started swinging. And it felt to me frustration. Was there a few digs during the game that we didn't see? I don't know. But, you know, sometimes when things aren't clicking for you, maybe, you know, you just get a little bit frustrated. Ball goes away from you. You give away a free. You know the game is up. It felt there was just something in it there. Like, it's unlike him to be getting sent off. And, you know, look, I don't really judge the fella for it, but you could see once, like, when he came up swinging, like, whether he connected or not. Like, I was just watching and said it was red. Like, you know, the linesman...
In real time, it's very hard for me to. I couldn't see it. He looked like he lost possession.
So
could you explain to me what happened? I didn't see it.
Yeah, so the ball broke away and Tony Kelly was going to rise it. And he went in and just kind of fouled Tony Kelly as Tony Kelly was rising it.
Thomas, so was that the red?
No.
I think it would have just been a free for that.
We all thought it was red for the head challenge. We didn't
know. As soon as he went away, the Clare players pushed him away because Tony Kelly was now on the ground holding his head, and the Clare players pushed him away. And once he was getting pushed, he just turned and started swinging. So, like, from the camera angle, like, all you could see was what the linesman was seeing, and you just saw this left hand swinging. So whether he was connecting or not, I just said straight away, I said, there's a red. Now, I know afterwards I saw people on social media saying maybe this fella or whatever, or that fella. There was a lot of players went in, and the only thing I saw was just Burns swinging. So look, I was kind of saying to myself, if the linesman didn't see that, Burns will be a lucky boy that he gets away with it. But yeah, look, a bit of frustration here. He'll get his ban. What will it be? Two matches?
Probably gets two for striking, yeah.
Yeah, see out the league now, basically, essentially. So unless they qualify for the league final, that'll be his league kind of play. So we'll see. But it'll be two matches anyway, and imagine that'll be that.
The thing about this as well, Scale, Limerick now was listening to John Kiley on the radio after the game, and he was saying it was a patchy kind of display, wasn't happy obviously with how they played during it, not the standards they usually get to. So they now have next week's game against Galway. They then go to Kilkenny on St. Patrick's weekend, which is the refix game because of the storm. Then they've got Wexford after that as well. So they have a reasonably kind of intense finish now. They've lost effectively what would have been their break week because of that match now being rescheduled as well. Yeah. I mean, is this a case of Kylie doesn't really mind? He gets to try out new players. Maybe he gets time into Peter Casey and into Morrissey. Or how do Limerick now approach the rest of the league? Because they should be fine towards the bottom of the table, but it's probably going to be difficult now to get into a league final. So what's he do from here?
I'd imagine he's going to throw an awful lot of the similar starting team next week that he had this week, just to give them another chance kind of a retribution a bit. I always say a manager and coach as seasoned as Kylie and Knurk with the seasoned players they have under their belt, there's no panic there whatsoever. And I do believe that there's the full focus now seems to have shifted for everybody. This is Galway inclusive too, whereby the timeline from now, once again to March, to Championship, it shortens very, very fast. When the evenings begin to get long and the focus becomes on yes, the league fulfilling fixtures, etc. But I wonder, do teams like Limerick want to be in the league final? I honestly wonder. I wonder, do they? So when you've got injuries to contend with and we know how compressed the Championship season is, do they really want to be in the league final? So I think it's going to be business as usual, Will, to be honest. I think they're going to keep trying out the players to see the strength of their squad. They're going to keep giving chances to the Barry Murphys, Aidan O'Connors, Fergal O'Connors. You know, Ethan Hurley did himself really well again today, no loss in him whatsoever. So it's kind of a continuation of I won't say that the performance level they're used to, but nothing has dropped off dramatically. So there's no panic in Limerick. I think they keep going what they have. They keep giving opportunities to players. They see who comes up trumps. It'll be a tough game against Galway. I'm fairly sure Galway will win fairly sacked. Next week they'll go as close, I won't say as close to 15, but certainly they'll have 12, 13 of their main guys starting because they need to get a feel too. You know, they need to get a feel of where they're at in Championship. And I think the challenge games are going to be over. There's going to be, let's say, like final two, three more games between now and the first round of the Leinster Championship. What have you got? Who's going to stand up to the test of it? And if you've got a question mark over a player who is new or young and they're going okay, put them all against Limerick and vice versa. Put them all against Galway and see what you have. Have you got a real contender for a start position here in a few weeks? So I think we said there's going to be a bite today. Marcel was biting the game. I agree. Mm-hmm. I expect a bit of bite next week. Yeah.
Don't give away too much. We'll address this on the members pod when we're previewing the games with our picks. So we did have a few questions in. I noticed as well, like, how do you get the members pod? What's the crack with the members pod, et cetera, et cetera. You need to be an off-the-ball member for it. And as I've probably pointed out a few times in this, offtheball.com/join is the place to go. And again, the best advice I can give to you is have a good read of that website before you decide where you want to sign up. If you prefer watching this, YouTube, I reckon, is the best place to go. You get all the videos of everything that goes out for Off the Ball in general there. If you prefer listening to podcasts, pick wherever you prefer listening. If you just want to have a taste of it and you just want to listen to a few things, if you sign up on the Off the Ball app, you get 3 free listens a month. You can probably get a feel for what's there and what's available. You can listen to our members pod for free if you want. You can get 3 of this month. You could get all of February's, the 3 shows free last month. Or if you want to sign up on Apple or on Spotify, if that's where you prefer to pick it up, sign up there. But that would be my advice. Just have a look there and let us know if you're having any problems signing up. I think someone was on to me during the week by email and I got back to them on Saturday. So before we walk off this game, one other thing I want to ask both of you about. Jack O'Neill for Clare today. Murph, we were looking at maybe young players that might break through and might give options. There's now going to be a position up for grabs in that forward line for Clare. What did you make of his performance? 3 points in play today.
Yeah, I think even Tony Kelly actually referenced him in the post-match interview. Like three points from play was brilliant. It was the same as Tony Kelly contributed from play. Like, if you want to just put it in play and text, he passed the test big time today in terms of, if you look at Dermot Healy for Cork, similarly enough, you know, the night before against Kilkenny. But I think even more so, like, you earn your stripes a lot better when it's playing against Limerick, because there's a level of consistency there, you know. So a player goes out, gets 3 points from play against Limerick. Brilliant for Brian Lowen. Like, in a week where you're going, we're down to like Shane O'Donnell, not to be, you know, constantly saying that. For other young players, and like, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he was really good today. Really stood up well. And something we maybe haven't mentioned was conditions weren't exactly perfect either today. Like, I mean, across the league at the moment for this weekend, you know, it's sticky. Like, the ground is sticky, the ball is getting stuck, there's quite a few rucks. It's hard enough for players to be shaken, lads. Like, I'm looking at Galan here. Galan, 2 points from play, Aidan McCarty, 1 point from play. So like, if I'm right in saying it, I'm fairly sure Jack O'Neill, Tony Kelly, and I think there was one more. They were all 3 points from play. Like, they were the biggest contributors from play. So, look, passed the test. Brilliant. I suppose two swallows never made a summer. He has to go at it again. But, like, if there's one test that you pass and you pass it in style, Limerick is the one to do it. So fair play to him. And it's great if I know we'll get to Cork as well in a while, like Dermot Healy as well. It's great seeing young players like that, you know, going out, performing, showing up, because like, they get to go home tonight, wake up tomorrow morning, go into training this week and go, geez, that's brilliant now. Their back is up. It's a big learning curve for them. And he certainly earned it today. So fair play to him.
What do you reckon, Skell? I mean, we've liked Crotty as well, but of these kind of next wave of Clare's players coming through, he's done his championship minute chances no harm today.
No harm, and I have to, before I address that point, I have to address Murph. I think we just got an insight to the Kilkenny mindset.
Huh.
When it comes to youth, yeah. Two swallows never made a summer. Ara, what will you do next week?
Well, that was the phrase that was told to me after we won the Leinster final in 2011. I had played two good matches, but Brian just said, well done today, two swallows never made a summer.
Can you mind it? Yeah.
In my own mind, it was like, it was a good way to put it. It was a good way to...
So, can you write, until that man nails on the wing forward position, gets man the match in the final and hurler of the year, no, he's not made it yet.
Until he has a freaking pub named after him, he's not made it yet.
So, again, similar to last week, when I was talking about Jimmy Healy, like Jack O'Neill, we've watched a bit too, because he's under 20 for Clare this year. 20-year-olds, like, they're getting good change from the underage system, I have to be fair. He ran a 2:54 1K in the fitness test recently, which is, and that was the one where you go up and down 10 times, so there's 10 turns. That's an extremely impressive time.
With a turn, so, that now is serious.
Yeah, extremely impressive time. So when you consider the shooting, he's shooting prowess, Dermot, and scoring, that guy will run all day for you. So he's right in the Brian Lohan mold of never stop working, never stop hooking, blocking, tackling. So he could be a valuable cog in the Clare wheel to come forward this year. So he's a good operator, yeah. Real good operator, and good time for him.
Yeah, no, big time. Right, let's move to what happened on Leaside on Saturday night then. This was the live game on TG Carr on Saturday evening. Cork eventually won against Kilkenny, 122 to 216. Dermot Healy, aforementioned, 1-5 from play on his first start for Cork at senior level. Patrick Horgan adding 10 points from dead balls. Missed a couple, but generally hit them fairly well. The top scorer in championship history, 6 frees, 165 during the game for him. And then Kilkenny, the good spread of scores. The goal coming from Stephen Donnelly, the first one, then Billy Ryan, 1-1. Throughout the game, Keane Kenny, who we'll talk about in a second, with 3 points, Jordan Malloy as well, and Owen Cody hitting 7 points during the game. So before we talk about itself, you kind of mentioned it already, Murph. People will have seen the Keane Kenny shoulder. He goes in too hard on that tackle, doesn't he? Like, when you go in at that angle and you make contact like that, you're probably lucky not to get a red.
Yeah. It was a red, like, you know, as in the, we go back to talking about, there doesn't have to be malice involved anymore just for it to be a tackle in the head. Was it last year we were sitting here, maybe 2 years ago, there's quite a few head tackles going in, and we just said something had to be done about it. And I'm not, you know, pointing to another sport, but in rugby, again, that's the line that they've gone with, that it doesn't have to be malice for it to be a red card. It's just to deter players from particularly going, when a player is like rising the ball or coming up out of a tackle, to actually go and attempt in a tackle of them, because there's a risk factor there. And we saw it with Keane O'Sullivan, right, in saying Keane O'Sullivan got sent off for Dublin against Waterford today. Similar tackle in that, and trying to think whichever Waterford player was coming out with the ball, and he just went in, just missed the tackle, hit them in the head. There was no malice. He wasn't going to try and do it. And himself and Keane Kenny are both in the same card there. It's just that for whatever reason, Keane Kenny just got away with it. And, like, you know, Derek will be saying that to Keane. I think even Keane will see it himself and go, yeah, I'm lucky I got away with that. And to be honest, you're better off approaching it that way, because, you know, if you bring that into championship thinking that you're going to be able to miss time tackles and get away with it, you'll get caught eventually. So, look, like we said, similar as Tony Kelly, similar as Keane O'Sullivan Dublin, there's no malice involved, but at the end of the day, it was reckless, and it was Kieran Joyce, and fairly sure he hit. Yeah, like, so he just, look, again, another referee on another day, that was a red card, and you'd have to say justifiably.
Red card for you as well, Skell?
I think so. I take the same line as Murphy these days now, when you consider the rugby approach. Is, look, some might agree and disagree with it, but what they're doing is they're protecting the player, first of all. And when you protect the player, the onus is on the tackler to mitigate all possibility of creating an issue whereby he puts himself in the line of getting red card. And I think he can, he runs in fast, he runs in hard. There's genuine intent to put a tackle and a hit, not a hit in the head. I think when you see a lot of these incidents, right, it's a rarity, an extreme rarity, where I see someone that goes in and intends to hit you in the head. I just think he's intent to put in contact, stopping your momentum and doing a turnover. That's all. So I think it was a red card, to be fair. He got a bit lucky. Grant, as Murph said, you can take that as an ample forewarning, what's coming to the championship. And not to say that he's going to be watched. That's not what I mean. But just for himself, that if he's getting into tackles in that kind of instance, torn down a little bit. Now, I had a little giggle, I won't lie, that when he did the tackle, right, he turned around to look. He's down himself with the head, okay? So I like the bit of acting. I had to say it, right, Murph? Sorry, I had to say
it. Yeah. No.
Shit, and then he went down.
I think I saw a few people saying that, all right, that he went, right, I may hit the deck here now. I just kind
it
of,
yeah, 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 yeah. He's genuine 50-50 then. Oh, God, he's hurt.
It distracts from it. I suppose to remark on another case that happened, the minor final there last year, Kilkenny and Tipperary, like, there was kind of a, do you know the way you go to a game and there'd be maybe someone from, you could be your own county or another county sitting behind you, and you end up talking to him. There was a Tipperary lad behind us, and Tipperary had already had the first player sent off over at the sideline. But the second one, when it happened, it was shoulder to the head. And when I saw it happening, I just turned to your man and said, that's going to be a red card. And he went, no way, sure, that was harmless enough. It was harmless. Like, there's no malice again. But I was like, no, like, the way the referees are looking at this is contact with the head, it's a red card. And it's not a case of having to say that the player was guilty of maliciously going in on the player. It was just simply that it was reckless. And he was going, no way. And next thing, red card comes out, and he went, like, as if I was, after mystically pulling this, I was like, no, that's, like, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the referee and what they're being told and what the rule has been brought in to do. And that's simply a case of, it's protecting the player. Like, the other side is, if you put yourself in the boots of the player, it's going rising the ball. Like, Kieran Joyce, justifiably, should be able to run at that ball, rise it, and not be terrified that player X is coming flying in to hit him. Yeah. The onus has to be that player X is worried about hitting Kieran Joyce because he doesn't want to get a red card. That's what benefits the game, because that allows Kieran Joyce run for the ball, rise it, drive out of it, and the game stays flowing. Instead of being terrified that a player who probably weighs 95 kg or 90 kg or 100 kg hitting you as fast as they can, because that's where the danger element comes in. So like,
he
eventually went off. Kieran Joyce eventually, but I don't know.
He looked a bit groggy going off. Is that right?
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, I actually can't remember. Was it for that or just after that, or when did it happen? But my recollection is that he stayed on for a while, and I don't know why he went off, but he went off, and to put it this way, his helmet was off him when he walked off. So that was...
He was groggy.
Yeah, usually when a player has the helmet off, it's not a hamstring injury, it's a head injury.
We wondered as well, Scale, about Cork and how hard they were going at this. This obviously was a difficult week for them as well, because Pat Ryan's brother Ray passed away during the week, and there's that kind of emotional moment really before the game where they pay tribute to him, and I can only imagine it was a very difficult week for Pat Ryan just in a general sense as well. But when it came to this, Cork went out strong. We were wondering what kind of team they were going to pick, because they had been mixing and matching a little bit so far. And even if you are giving lads like Healy a chance to come in for a first start, and there were two lads getting their first starts the last day, and Cork have been kind of dipping into the reserves a little bit during the league, this was much closer to their All-Ireland team. 11 of the starters were there. Like, when you have Robert Downey coming back in, when you have Horgan playing, when you have Declan Dalton back from suspension, I think what we saw on Lee's side on Saturday night is not too far away from what the Cork team is going to look like in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think, again, what we're saying about different teams, they've one eye on championship, and this is like a precursor to that. But from my perspective, I was looking at the Cork team and said, right, how are they going to... sometimes they're very emotional, in terms of the home crowd. They can be very, very hot to handle. If you play them in Páirc Uí Chaoimh and they get going on you, it's very hard to kind of stop them in one sense. But Kilkenny were rugged. And I think from two things I took away from this game was... One was how well Cork connected the game between their half-back line and half-forward line. So they used their midfield and used their half-forward line really well. And on the other side, I thought it was really poor from Kilkenny's perspective, which I wouldn't associate them too normally, where they kept getting ball on their half-back line and delivering long-range shots, deliveries, and they're just mopped up. I have no problem delivering a long-range ball from, let's say, the five wing if it's a one-on-one inside in the square. I do have a problem if it's a continuous long-range delivery when there's 2v2 or 3v3. It's more like of a hopeful outcome as opposed to an expectant outcome. Whereas Cork, for me, they connected their half-forward line really well. I was so surprised. I decided to watch one player, and that was Darragh Fitzgibbon, where he picks up his positions. So in the positions in the first half, he picked up positions in every position between 5 and 12. So he picked it up in 5, 6, 7, 8. Tell me, he was all over the park there, and all he was doing was connecting little 5-yard, 10-yard passes here to the likes of Barrett, to Healy, not so much to Dalton, in fairness. And next thing, they were out and delivering the ball inside. And I just thought it was a really good way of phasing their play. And Kinney, on the other hand, like Malai and Kinney were good, but they just didn't get the same fruition. They should have used them an awful lot more. I thought that we should be using Jordan Malai. Like Massey Keown has been red hot the last couple of weeks. And he got, was it 1 point from play? I could be wrong. Didn't seem to get the game as much as he'd like. Yeah, you know what I mean? Billy Ryan, huge turn of pace. Use him. Just connect him way more. And this is not a criticism of the Kinney halfback. And please don't think it is. They defended fairly well to a degree with what was in front of them. But I just thought when they got the ball in open space, Davy Blanchfield, Paddy Deegan, Mike Carey, it was just bang, bang it in long. Do you know what I mean? And it wasn't even a deep delivery into a corner forward position. It was a high ball that could be a shot or it could be just a hit, into a danger zone that didn't have much penetration or much impact. And look, if you're looking for something to correct or to fix from a Kilkenny perspective, I'd be pointing towards that. That's an easy enough fix. You could fix that fairly quick. They didn't get technically opened by Cork. They weren't run off the pitch in fitness or in aggression. Just that's the kind of message I took from the game. And it reminded me of that. Remember the game we referenced before with they played Wexford in Norland Park? Mm. The delivery, it reminded me of that, whereby wasn't really... That was the old style hurling, if you like, of 7 or 8 years ago, more even. Whereas the new style, the current style, if you like, is how you connect yourself between your half-back line and your half-forward line to get the ball either A, into your full-forward line, or B, into a shooting zone. But I was really impressed with the likes of Healy. I know I mentioned him last week. He's a guy that I've noted here, Declan Dalton, very despondent. He looks very despondent. His knee was heavily strapped. So when you get that, and then you get the impact of like Jimmert Healy, you're like, Jesus, now do we have a new guy here coming at the wing forward position? So in one sense, Pat Ryan is thankful that he's got these guys pushing. And the other sense, like, you have players who were big players for you last year, now feeling the heat a little bit. So interesting. It was a good game, though. And the attendance, wow. Was it 22,000?
Touch over 22,000,
Last
year's league final was 12,500. And so we've got a group game in the league. So it just goes to show more of what you were saying. This year's league is, it's exciting. It's interesting. Mm. So 22,000, some job.
Yeah. Something that I kind of liked about Cork as well, Murph, there was a few times towards the end of the game, Kilkenny were kind of snatching at chances and maybe taking shots from areas they probably shouldn't. TJ was one that kind of stood out for me where he took one from near midfield when he probably should have taken it on and maybe tried to find another pass. Was that almost directly after that, Cork scored one of those scores that's become kind of the Cork trademark. It was Barrett who put it over. I think it stretched it to 4 points at that stage, but it was so simple. It was just like one pass, win the puck out deep in the opposition half, pop it off, runner off your shoulder, and Barrett gets into a position to score. Like when Cork move the ball like that, they're very, very difficult to stop.
Yeah, they are. And they seem to have a great understanding at the moment as to what they're about. And like that really only kind of comes from being forged over maybe 2 or 3 years. Like very hard to turn that on over the course of about 6 months. It's just players repetitively playing with each other, training matches, different things, and then sticking to the process of what you're about. I'd agree with you there, and I agree with what Skettle said before. Like it was exactly the game that reminded me of Kilkenny was the Wexford run a few years ago. And I'm comparing and contrasting, you know, Cork. Cork's use of the ball and their calmness and their ability to run with the ball and wait for opportunities to crop up while moving the ball really well. So like, you know, player would carry it, take their steps, look up, pop it, and then go and support. There was times Kilkenny were getting caught in like cul-de-sacs where their player was running down around the half forward line and you just felt that their forwards were just a little bit flat. I felt bad for Harry Shine there in the first half. He was kind of making runs for balls and what he was getting was 80 yard balls lumped down on top of him, getting caught flat footed. And I was going, sure, what can he do with that? They're funny matches sometimes in those ways that I've been part of those games where you don't even kind of realize you're doing it until this is where the analysis lads kick in and they'll show you. So look at this, lads. Here's three examples of what we said we won't do, but we ended up doing it there. And particularly shots from distance where they hit about 3 or 4 wides in a row. Like Davy Banfield hit maybe 2 as well, and he'll look back at that and go, that's not what we're about. Whereas you show what Cork were doing. Cork, I would say, actually, I think they had about 3 or 4 less opportunities in the first half to score, but they were just being more efficient. And like efficiency will beat you every day of the week. If you just go out there and you chip away and you get 70% of your scores or whatever it's going to be, that'll do a fair amount to beating a team. And exactly like you were saying there, Will, the simplicity of what Cork were doing in the last 10 or 15 minutes just chipped away at Kilkenny because Kilkenny had made a few bad decisions. They were now in the phase where they were tired in the game. You're more inclined to make bad decisions at that stage. And it just, like Kilkenny just consistently kept kind of falling away from it there where Cork, you know, Shane Barrett, again, Jesus, just his energy is unbelievable. He just keeps going. He starts games so well. He's probably one of the best players I've seen to start a game. Yeah. But still has that relentless electric energy coming towards the end of the game. But all over the field, like 1-5 there from Dermot Healy, that's outstanding. Any game, any stage of the year, you get 1-5 from play, man of the match stuff there. But yeah, I'd agree with you. Like Cork just had this understanding at the moment where their movement is really good. They're making mistakes. Every team is making mistakes at the moment. But it's how quickly are you getting to grips with getting rid of those mistakes? And more often than not within the game, okay, for every one mistake you make 2 right decisions after that and just make simple scores. It's great for the confidence. It's great for, especially when you're going to try and kick down the home straight and you're going for home, you feel like we have enough for this team if you're just popping balls over there with real simple scores when the legs are tired, the head's a bit fuzzy now, you're getting very tired and there's subs coming in and different things. You know, and there was a few big plays there as well. I think Downey came out with a ball over TJ there, big catch, drove up the field. There were some times there where they were just doing very simple things really well and keeping their momentum going forward. So, like, I tipped Kilkenny last week. I just thought that it maybe meant a bit more to Kilkenny. I thought there would have been a bigger performance. But at the moment, what I think we're seeing is that a Cork at, I would say Cork were at about 80-85% the other night. Saw how good they are even still at 80-85%. Like, I think they've really matured over the last year. I'd be far less critical of them than I was maybe 2 years ago. I just think the group as a whole has really matured. And yeah, they're capable of beating you at 80-85% at the moment, which is the sign of a dangerous team.
Yeah. The way this is going to finish out, I know, Murph, you're going to Tipping Kilkenny now this coming weekend to cover for Off the Ball. So obviously that derby always has a huge amount on it. And if Kilkenny are going to get back in the shake-up to finish top two, they need to win that game. And they've got Limerick on Patrick's weekend coming around as well in their last 2 fixtures. So what are you expecting from Kilkenny for the rest of this? Because I found it hard, and I think we said this in the members pod last week, to really put a gauge on Kilkenny. You know, winning against Clare away from home, then losing against Galway, then beating Wexford and being good in parts of that game and not good in other parts of the game, and now losing this game against Cork. So 3/4 of the way through the league, if you want to look at it that way, what's your assessment of Kilkenny?
the assessment at the moment, like for any team, I think your assessment of the league has to be that, okay, do I want them to win the league? Don't really care if they win the league or not, to be honest. I would be happy with Kilkenny coming through, having put in a high percentage good performances, 80% good performance, having blooded a few players and having shown that the brand of hurling that they're playing is suitable to all the players that they have, and it's also going to be, you know, a good way to play, bringing it into the championship. At the moment, I think a few of the things that Derek will be looking at, and that I suppose the Kenny people will be looking at, is we haven't seen I don't know if I want to see a 70-minute performance yet, because that's peak-level stuff when you're peaking is 70-minute. Mm. But, you know, you'd want to see a 55, 60-minute performance really solidly out of Kilkenny. I think Tipperary is ideal for Kilkenny this weekend, because, let's say, they played Wexford, outstanding start. First half, couldn't fault them, really good. Second half, turned it off. Went into the dressing room, whatever happened, and that's on the players, it's not on management. You know, players turned it off there, and they would have not been happy with that. Clare, let Clare kick on, you know, up by 6 points after about 15 minutes, you know, not good. Galway then beat him in Nolan Park. There's things there that Derek Ling will turn around and say, lads, Tipperary are in town in Nolan Park. We should be going beating these lads, you know, and that's the bottom line. Sorry, I'm correct in saying that. It is Nolan Park this weekend. Yeah, it's Nolan Park. Yeah. So I would be saying to Derek Ling, saying, listen, lads, we're putting tactics in front of you. We're putting formations here in front of you. But at the end of the day, a bit of pride has to come into it as well. And what are you capable of doing? Like, and Tipperary, Nolan Park is the ideal performance for that. You know, I've seen one or two of the ex-players just kind of saying as well, you know, they don't want to see this kind of slippage of Kilkenny, you know, accepting that it's okay to lose a match here and there, and accepting that, you know, the performance still has to be there. So a really good in-form Tipperary at the moment coming to Nolan Park, I think this has the makings of a really good game. I think both teams have a lot to take from it, and I think both teams want this as a real good litmus test as to where they are, because they're not going to see each other again now for a long time, so they can really go at it. I know Kilkenny have that extra game against Limerick coming up as well, but I don't think that factors into it. I think it's ideal for Derek at this weekend. I think it's ideal for Liam Cahill as well. I know we'll get into it in the members pod, but I just think it's an ideal challenge where they'll go, lads, we can do all the tactics we want, but at the same time, we have to remember, like, that there is a huge amount of pride here at the end of the day, and we should be going out here, and there should be skin and hair flying. And, you know, point to Limerick and Clare. Like, how much of that was tactics and how much of that was pride and getting stuck in and a bit of guts? That's a lot of it. So I think for this weekend, Derek will be saying, lads, you've shown that you know how to play. You have all the skill. You're banging in goals when you want, but then you're also taking the foot off the gas when you want. Here now is, if I don't see lads going out here taking the hinges off the doors, you know, then there's question marks. So I think a big performance from Kilkenny this weekend, and, you know, get absolutely stuck in. There should be no reason to go and win this game. That should be the way they should be looking at it.
I can ask you, Skell, what the feedback is around Galway's win last night, because we didn't see this in the telly. So Galway win 219 to 120 away from home against Wexford. Goals from Anthony Burns and Kevin Cooney slotting away a penalty, which kind of took any chance of a Wexford fight back away within the game. Galway win. And the other side to it is, this is three wins in a row now on the back of that disappointing first performance against Tipperary. Mm-hmm. But maybe crucially as well, David Burke comes in, gets his first minutes of the year, and now they've used 36 different players in the league so far.
37
now. That's unbelievable.
37, yeah. So they do 37. They have, and those players have ranged in from, obviously, you know, mature seasoned players to young guys who are, you know, out of the 20s or in about the 20s. And I do think we'll see more before this league is over. I think that 37 will easily surpass the 40, because I know those guys, would you believe, involved in school competition that will probably feature. Can you believe that? They're playing with the Prez Athen Rye. So I'm talking about Jason Rabbit, I'm talking about Aaron Ireland. You know, we saw Sean Murphy, who was in the Prez Athen Rye as well. He played cornerback versus Tipperary in the first day out. So I do think we'll get two more players that'll see league form. But the trouble is the Athen Rye team are now in the final, which is on Paddy's Day, so it'll be towards the latter stage or in the final itself, potentially, if we get there. But I think Micheál and his management team will be very happy with the way things have been corrected. You know, and they were corrected first and foremost, let's say, in that Kilkenny game. And it's like, I look at that Galway-Kilkenny game as the perfect game that we needed, that Galway needed to go down to a very, very tough place to play against opposition who we know who fight hard for every ball and go at it. And just, as you said there, Murph, Kilkenny probably need the Tipperary game to come at them now. Like, the two games they have are against, you know, theoretically, the two bottom teams at the moment, and the two losses they have are two teams who's, you know, who's on good runs, you could say, to be fair. So that's important for Kilkenny. But in Galway's perspective, went into a hard venue and came away with it. Now, it's not without its issues, because, you know, Kilkenny or Wexford the shot count was higher than us. Their efficiency wasn't there at all. So they had 38 shots. We had 32, you know, which is what, again, it's slightly worrisome when you consider that. I wouldn't say we're lucky. It's just that we took a good step in the right direction. It's hard to get any information on the game itself because we couldn't see it on television. I was going by radio and even talking to members of the team itself. But they're just happy, long way down, to come away with a victory. And there's players playing there who, this is their first league campaign, and they're making inroads. Like, you've got Michael Garvey, a wing-back, shooting 5 points. He's my own club mate. He's a serious operator. You've got Anthony Burns, a corner forward, again, continuing to get on the score sheet with a goal again, 1-1. So if you get these couple of boys, and Tiernan Killeen now from Loughrea as well, took a bit more, a larger step than we've seen him in the last couple of years. If those guys can get influential positions on a team nailed down, that's only going to help Galway improve. All the while, you've got, as you said, Will, like the I think Davey Burke, is he 35, 36 at this stage, coming into the game and not being lost in him. So that's good for him first minutes. So look, it's positive, but again, like you said, Murph, with the litmus test, it's coming again next week. And coming after they suffered a loss to their neighbour. So this is going to be, as you said, skin and hair flying next week again.
I think Wexford will probably look at this. So Keane Byrne was suspended from the red card. So Seamus Casey, Lee Chin were taking the frees this time around. They sent over 10 between them. Rory O'Connor, his goal appears to have come from a Galway puck out, which had misfired. And then Rory got into a position to score the goal. But I think these two performances that Wexford have put in the last couple of weeks won't do them any harm. They are still behind the eight ball when it comes to relegation. But two good back-to-back performances on weeks. They definitely feel like they're improving as they come towards the end of the league, but no points to be had there. So Galway,
are they guaranteed to go down, Will? Am I wrong?
No, they would have been. Yet. No. They would have been down if Limerick had beaten Clare today, but they still have Limerick in their last game.
Sorry.
They could still beat Limerick and potentially stay up in head-to-head. So it's not over just yet for them. Murph, you watched the Waterford game live earlier today, which was do you watch it? It was online, wasn't it, DJ Gar? I saw the third version of it, I saw it after the fact, but I was kind of keeping the scores in mind during it. I did flick on the app to look at the very end of the game because I was intrigued to see who was going to win, because it looked like Dublin had done enough. You know, when that Keane O'Sullivan second goal goes in, it feels like they're hitting for home. And then the narrative becomes, Dublin, okay, they lost late to Offaly, but they've gone now and beaten Waterford, and they've got a really good chance of getting promotion. And now Dublin are in a really tricky position after this defeat. So Waterford 123, Dublin 218. What was your overall impression of the game, Murph?
What was the overall? Dublin deserved to win. I say that now with an asterisk, a big asterisk beside it, because you only deserve to win at 70 minutes. But Dublin performed really well. They took off from the start, like really kicked into the game, and you thought, okay, you know, Waterford are getting a small bit flat-footed here, maybe thought they were going to work their way into the game. And really, Dublin were setting the pace, but there was very little between the teams after that. Like, Dublin got a good start, and, you know, Keane O'Sullivan goal in the first half as well, which, you know, kept the difference between the teams. Very little between the teams after that, but Dublin just kind of kept doing enough just to stay ahead. It was quite a tight game. Again, bit of mishandling and different. That we see it, we're seeing that across the games, regardless. But when Keane O'Sullivan got the second goal, exactly, you just thought, okay, well, Dublin are going to kick from home here. Now, Will, you typed into the group that it looked like Waterford were in trouble, but I just felt that Waterford kind of have this thing in them where they do rally, like, you know, as in particularly it was in Walsh Park. And I'd said it to you, I think there's a rally here in Waterford, but it wasn't looking good for them at the time. Now, Keane O'Sullivan then subsequently got sent off for the shoulder to the head. Waterford were, I think, 4 points down at that stage. They just started rattling off a few scores then, and you just felt that the momentum was completely against Dublin in the last 5 or 10 minutes. And Patrick Curran's goal then, I believe it's his birthday today as well, so I'm sure he'd be delighted coming off the bench with 1-1. But his goal and his point, sure, that just really sealed it for them. I think they won by about 2 points in the end, 2 or 3. But it was, look, there was very little between the sides. Dublin will be disappointed now because obviously it does hurt their chances now of getting promoted. I think, Will, you went through the permutations there for possibly Dublin getting promoted. It's a tough position for them now because head-to-heads at Waterford and different things. But It's you know, I'm just trying to think of how both teams are going to walk away from that game. Peter Queeley will be happy they got the win, first of all. That's the main thing. Get the win and worry about it after that. But, you know, for large patches of this game, they just weren't really penetrating Dublin. And Dublin were just doing the simple thing well for quite a long period of the game. You know, they were just chipping away, staying doing the right thing without being really, I suppose, superb. They were quite aggressive in the tackle. They were moving the ball well. So they're, you know, they're going up the road today going, geez, lads, they did. They left, I suppose, a win behind them. They just have to learn how to close out them games after doing the hard work over like 60, 65 minutes.
That's the thing. If it was a 65-minute league at the moment in Division 1B, Dublin would be sitting on top with 4 wins from 4. And, you know, they'd be in a very strong position to get promoted. So the permutations then.
65-minute league. What are you talking about?
Well, I'd say now a 68-minute league would have done them with the Offaly game because it was just going into injury time. Ahead, but so like the way the table looks, I'll give you the results from your two games in a second, but Offaly you've got 9 points from 5. Their break week is now coming up, so Offaly actually have 3 weeks off because of the way it works out, because they don't have a fixture on Patrick's weekend. Waterford are in second place. They've got 6 points from 4 games. They're lost against Carlow at the start, but they've now won 3 in a row. Dublin are 2-2 with 4 points. Carlow are sitting just behind them. Talk about the draw against Antrim in a moment, but Carlow have only played 3. So Carlow have a game in hand, which is against Laois away from home. That makeup is on the Patrick's weekend, which will probably be on the Saturday because Laois footballers are playing Clare on the Sunday. So if Carlow were to win that, they go ahead of Dublin in the shake-up here. If Waterford do their own business, which you'd expect, they beat Westmeath, who are all but mathematically relegated at the bottom of the table now. If Waterford win in Mullingar this coming Sunday, Dublin have way too much of a chase going into the last two rounds because of the fact they're behind Offaly on head-to-head and they're behind Waterford on head-to-head. Like, I'm safe enough in saying Dublin are probably out of the race for promotion now. It's probably a three-way fight for 2 places between Offaly, Waterford and Carlow.
Yeah, the odds are against them. They kind of need a little bit of a slip-up there to... Which is disappointing for them because, you know, it was quite a positive start and Fianna winning the Club All-Ireland, you're expecting an injection. But look, learning curve for, I think... the panel as a group. It's a very new panel, if I'm going to put it that way, with a new face to it. So a bit of a learning curve for them, but they need to learn from these lessons. You know,
are we saying, lads, that it's all but an Offaly and Waterford final?
Oh, look at you. Look at you trying to tempt me in here.
But come here. Listen to me. Your arse is on the fence, right? All year. So take your arse off the fence, right? And pick a side.
He's afraid to jinx it. He doesn't want to derail the Offaly bandwagon.
There's going to be clipped in a week or two going. He said they're already in the final.
There's tweets going around about the Hurling 1B and is it Division 3 football at the moment. So it's the Offaly bandwagon is up and going.
It's getting a little too excited.
Okay, I'll ask you a question, right?
Yeah.
If you were to put a percentage chance of Offaly being in the final of Division 1B, what would it be?
Ah, like it has to be over 70 at this stage. Realistically, it has to be.
Fuck, sorry, stop it, okay?
They're top of the group, it has to be over 70.
70.
Right, I'll admit that's...
85%, I would say, is it?
Probably around that, yeah.
Like they're held for 5 games.
Hold on, they still have to go to Waterford in the last game. And you still have Carlo in a position where Carlo have got 2 games in hand on Offaly to play over the next couple of weeks. I would prefer to have the points in hand than to be in Carlo's position where Carlo have to play Dublin at Parnell Park and they have to play Laois in O'More Park and have to win those 2 games. So Carlo's margin for error is 0 in those 2 fixtures. They have to win. I would much prefer to be in Offaly's position with the feet up for the next 3 weeks, getting some of the injured players back. Even Johnny Kelly was saying after their win against Westmeath today that some of their longer term injuries could well be, you know, touch and go for the last round of the league or for a league final. So they've done exactly what they need to do. 5 games in, unbeaten, 9 points on the board. And all they can do is just watch and see what happens to the other teams. I wonder about Dublin's motivation going into the Carlow game. But then again, Dublin will still want to finish the league strongly to maybe carry a bit of momentum into the league.
Preparation.
So you would think so. Like, they're not going to just roll over when Carlow
win Parnell Park. They can't afford to do that. They have to keep going because every game for Dublin now is it's trying to build towards that bit of confidence and positivity going into a round robin. So like, even if they're kind of going, lads, maybe not, we're sure the best thing we can do across the board here is go out and win these games and perform really well. So there's no reason for them to take any foot off the gas. It's not like, you know, Limerick or whoever maybe going, we're happy enough not to play a league final. Like, Dublin are in a different position here.
Yeah. So the drama came elsewhere, which was in Netwatchcullen Park, which is Antrim rescuing an unlikely point with the various positions they were in against Carlow during the game. But Jared Walsh scoring a very late goal. It finished Antrim 218, Carlow 121. Antrim had also missed a penalty during the game, though. And also Conor Johnson had a free that came back off the post and could have been a goal as well. So Antrim did have chances during the game. But in the end, it turned out James McNaughton again leading their scoring, 8 points from him. Conor Johnson with 1-2. Jared Walsh with the other goal. Marty Cavanagh with 7 points. And Chris Nolan with 1-4 for Carlow during the game. I have to give credit to Antrim here, Skell, because last week we talked about how poor they had been in a couple of games back-to-back and how disappointed they were. And, you know, Davey talking about they need to show a bit of pride in the jersey and show they care for their supporters. And then to go down and get a point out of Carlow, which is put them in a fairly decent position to stay up now at this stage. That's a decent response from Antrim today in Carlow.
Yeah, there was a bit of, I had a bit of concern for Antrim because after the comments that was put into the public last week by the manager, that could go one or two ways. You either get a knee-jerk reaction in a negative way or a positive way. You either get a good response where they put the shoulder to the wheel and try guts out a result, or it's the snowball effect. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And in fairness, that was a tough place to go to in their current form, and to rattle it out with two goals in quick succession. You know what I mean? It's a positive, and that's what you look for. If you're in a team who's not playing their best hurling, or not moving the best, or struggling to understand or comprehend the system, just try and get back to the basic positives. Just try and work hard and grind out results. So they evidently worked hard, grind out results, and took it from the death. And it's a very, very valuable point they're going to get. Because what you were saying about the Leash and Westmeath situation in terms of points, Antrim now have 3 points, is that right?
They have 3 points, yeah, and they've already beaten one game Westmeath, played, so yeah, they're basically safe.
If they get to the golden five, you know what I mean, and Westmeath stay on zero, obviously, and Leash, yep, even if they win, will get one win, you know, that they're relatively safe, and it's important for Antrim to stay safe.
Well, Antrim, this is my reading of it, so Antrim have got Leash next week in Ballycastle, so they're even bringing them further up than Corrigan Park. I believe Leash are staying in Belfast and making the trip up to Ballycastle for a lunchtime game next Sunday.
You're fairly good, aren't you? Because you've got 5 points.
Yeah. Now, if they draw, obviously they leave the door open for Leash at that stage to catch them, but if Antrim can get a win, and they'd be backing themselves, as I say, to get a home win in Ballycastle against Leash, Antrim will be safe and they'll just finish the table and it'll be there. That's it. I mean, look, they need a result, but getting to three gives them that little bit of wiggle room and that kind of guarantee as well that they can't be caught by one of the other teams. Westmeath aren't going to beat Waterford this weekend, so Westmeath are down, effectively. It'll be confirmed this weekend. And Leash desperately need a win against Antrim to get themselves out of the bottom two. So that's an intriguing game this weekend. I didn't deliberately skip over Offaly. I was working around that game earlier today. Johnny Kelly, the Offaly manager, said afterwards it was one of their worst performances of the year. They won 122 to 19 points in the end. Sometimes this happens in a derby. Really, it was a free-taking competition for the best part. Brian Dygan scored 14 points, 10 from frees and 165 for Offaly. Killian Doyle scored 14 points for Westmeath on his return from his travels. Didn't think he was going to actually be involved with Westmeath for the league, so it was a boost to get him in. He hit 12 frees during the game. Westmeath struggled to have a supporting cast around him. At least Offaly had a few more scorers. Killian Sampson got their goal reasonably early in the game. He's in flying form between Fitzgibbon and the league so far this year. And unfortunately for Westmeath, this leaves them on the kind of brink of going down. They were able to bring Davy Glennon, Niall O'Brien in for starts. They were kind of slowly but surely introduced in over the last couple of weeks. Offaly were able to start Ben Keneally during the game. Keelan Kiley came off the bench as well. So slowly but surely, Offaly are getting most of their major options back in. Evan Kelly's out for the rest of the year, but I think Adam Screeny is close to returning to training now. The only one thing, Skell, that happens for Offaly now, and this is not me intending to get ahead of myself here, if they get to this Division 1B final,
when
it's the same day, if as Offaly go to Galway in the under 20 first round in Leinster.
Well, do you know what? See, considering it's the final, right, for Offaly, I think all them Trinity should play the senior team.
and let them play extra time as well. That'd be the longest game ever.
If they should all go there because of the final, you know, that's evidently a more important game. So, yeah, let's take 10 of that team, right, shift them off to another ground, and we play.
That'll be sure to change a little bit, no?
I don't know. It might change this Sunday, but Offaly playing the 20s the next week as well. So I think you got to make a decision. Like, I'm sure Leo O'Connor and Johnny Kelly will sit down and have conversations, but I think promotion is the most important thing. And if they get promoted, I think you let the under-20s play with their own age grade. There's around 10 of them on the senior panel at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think you clear the decks, you play your fringe panel. If that means that Waterford or Carlo beat you in the final, so what?
Not coming from a... Look, this is the enemy talker now, considering the training in the Trinity, right? But I would believe that the preparation of the Trinity team has been greatly interrupted by the pursuit towards promotion from 1B. So if fair is fair to say, the 10 under 20s that you have, let's say, who haven't got much time with their under 20 group, you'd imagine in the month of February, if Offaly obtain promotion, you'd then turn them back to the Trinity team.
Yeah, I think you have to. They've been playing a load of fits over the last while as well, quite a few of them. So I can't imagine, as you said, they've trained collectively. I saw the team that they played against Cork in a challenge game a few weeks ago. I think it was before the Cork-Limerick game off the top of my head. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong here.
But, You're not wrong.
they didn't play the strongest of teams because there were so many lads with the seniors. So it's difficult. It's difficult if you're just kind of, you know, bringing those guys in just before championship starts as well. I think there has to be a feeling towards letting them have a few weeks now. Maybe while Offaly seniors have this 3-week break, that's a chance for the 20s to get more collective training. But they have a chance to retain their title. I think you got to give mm-hmm. them a chance to go at that first. So that's mm-hmm. that's where it's at. So the tables at the moment, because I want to ask Gail one last question just before we finish, which is totally away from hurling. Tipperary top of 1A despite not playing.
That worries me. Sorry.
Yep. Six from four. Galway 6-4 after their third win in a row. Cork have got 5 points from four. Kilkenny with 4 points from four. Limerick have a game in hand, so they've only played three. They've got 3 points. Wexford have played all but one, so they've five completed, 2 points. So they need results to go their way elsewhere if they're going to survive in the last day. Clare have played four games, 2 points on the board. They're not relegated just yet. The Great Escape could still happen. And I mentioned Division 1B, Offaly top, 9 points in five games. Waterford got 6-4. Dublin with 4-4. Carlow with 4-3. Antrim with 3-5, so that Laois game will determine everything for them. Laois have got 2 games still to play, and they've got 2 points, and Westmeath have 1 game left, and they've got no points on the board. So that is where we're at with that. The question I wanted to ask you, Skell, was actually something that came up. Hold on here now a second. It was in the comments last week. I know Stockroom Tim definitely brought it up. Here we go. 16 pints handy and a Malibu and milk, and I'll take the shirt off any man's back, which obviously references Paddy Lotsey. You were telling me afterwards that the guy who did the voice recording that everyone mm-hmm. will have seen of the meme was actually a Galway hurler.
Yeah, Aina Ryan, yeah. And I've heard so many times over the course of the last 9 years, it's different at the minute. I can categorically tell you it's not. It's Aina Ryan. He hurled number 10 for Galway in the years of 1911, around that stage.
Right.
He'd be a nephew of the Aina Ryan that played corner four for Galway in the late 80s.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so he's a comedian, I have to say. So he did that voice. But where that came from, actually, you might remember I did this weights program under the tutelage of Colin Kenlon back in 2015, where Aina Ryan was the guy who joined me. The two of us did together under the same time. And we had a small little three-man WhatsApp group, and he put up these little voice notes literally every week. And they were, one was better than the other. And one of the voice notes he put up was that exact message. He did it in the car.
No way.
Everything's off the cuff of this lad.
Yeah.
If you have him on Snapchat now or that, he'd be sitting in the car, he'd be pretending he's some other lad talking about selling a bull. Do you know what I mean? He's just pantomime.
Does that mean Paddy Lotsey actually came from a WhatsApp group that you were involved in?
110% on my father's grave. Yeah.
Bloody hell. 110%. Sorry, Murph, go on.
No, I was going to say that. So you know the picture of Paddy Lotsey that goes up? It's the grey kind of photo.
That's from a book about Dublin. So I believe he was down as one of the famous Dublin pint men.
So he's down as, and that's the photo that gets associated with it. In Snapchat, you can put in like little, you know, snippets of people in it. And I used to just randomly put Paddy Lotsey down the bottom corner of it every so often. We take it for, and I'd send it, and Colm Callanan would see it. I have Colm Callanan on Snapchat. And I was out on holidays in Spain somewhere. I was out in Tormelinas. I don't know where I was. And I put up this photo. I was sitting at a bar and I put it up. And it looked like Paddy Lotsey was at the far side of the bar. And Colin Callanan texted me and he was like, "Do you like Paddy Lotsey?" Now, I didn't know what you just said, Skell. I didn't know. Aina Ryan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that. And I was like, "Yeah, I do, yeah." He goes, "Hold on there for a minute." And next thing, a voice Snapchat or a voice note comes through my phone, WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And it's Paddy Lotsey. It's in Ryan. Yeah. But he does one as if he's speaking to me. Like, so he does it. I wouldn't be fond of drinking a few pints. And it was him. So I'll actually double on that there. It is him
because Colum's mother is from Clamardaley. My mother is from Clamardaley. Aina Ryan is from Clamardaley. So we're kind of a little connection there. And I'll tell him about this part now in the situation.
Will you please get him to send a video or a WhatsApp that we can actually stick up just to prove that he is Paddy Lotsey?
Listen to me. As we say in East Galway, as sure as my hole is facing the ground, right, I'll get one.
Jeez.
That is the perfect place to leave the main pod. See, don't ever tell me this podcast isn't educational in any way. You now know the origin of how he came to life. A picture of a pint man became a real man through a voice note that happened in a WhatsApp group about weightlifting with Colm Callanan and with James Gale. There you go. One went on to become a podcaster, one went on to be the Offaly goalkeeping coach, and one went on to be Paddy Lotsey. What a group.
Great group. Yeah. We should write a book together.
Bloody hell. Right, we'll leave it there for this week. We'll do the picks for the weekend on the members pod. Who knows, maybe we'll talk about the Oscars after Skell was asking us about our favourite films of last year. I see Skell's face looks worried when I say that. The Oscars are on tonight's recording this,
but so you can think about it. Okay.
Songs. Yes, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I bet you do. I'd say you've got an Excel spreadsheet with about 20 of them. Paul Murphy, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thanks, lads.
James Skell, we'll see you on the members pod. Thanks again.
Good to see you.